testing yourself.
Good evening. This is Susan Gingrich, the Herb Lady. And this evening we have a special guest with us, Kim Sharples from Colorado. So we're speaking to you from Ohio and Colorado. Our topic tonight is health freedom. Kim and I have both been experiencing, a call to call to arms, so to speak, in our commitment to seeking a good health freedom legal situation in several states. Let's start with this. Kim.
Yes.
Why do we need to concern ourselves with legislation surrounding health freedom, first of all? I mean, can't we all just go get whatever we want now?
Well, for instance, in the state of Colorado, according to our Medical Practice Act, anyone that does any type of alternative health care would be illegal. So we want to put in a health freedom bill so that would make it legal for everyone. That would make it legal for different practitioners to practice, and it would also give a freedom of choice to consumers to be able to go to the alternative health care practitioner that they choose to go to.
Okay, and in Ohio, we're kind of a test state for a lot of ideas. I guess we've been a test state for products all along in Columbus, Ohio, too. But in Ohio, we have a dietitian's bill that's been in effect for 20 years, and we also have a massage therapy bill. And these are all exemptions from the right to practice medicine. And what's been created here is kind of a, we have to be very careful what we say concerning the relationship of health and diet, because the dietitians own that relationship. And we can't touch anyone because the massage therapists own the right to touch. If you're not a chiropractor, they're the only other people who can. We live in a state where we have to be extremely careful about these boards, and basically we are also illegal just because when you work with somebody to maintain their wellness or to return them to wellness, you almost always have to bring in diet before you're done. So we are speaking illegally, and we have a very active dietitian's board. On average, we have 30 or so practitioners taken to court every year here, and it's been quite a problem. So that's why we need to do something on the legal front. And the more I've gotten involved in this, I'm realizing that I haven't really even imagined what a difference it would make to have the legal parameters that we're seeking here in health freedom. And I thought I'd surprise you with that question, Kim. How would life look different to the individual if a health freedom bill of the sort that we're looking for in all the states that we're working in, how would that change things on a daily basis for people, do you think?
Well, for practitioners, a lot of practitioners are practicing now because they want to help other people, but there is always that fear of, quote, getting in trouble with the law because they're doing something illegal. As a consumer, again, I want to be able to go to whoever I choose to go to. So whether that's someone that does iridology or an herbalist or naturopath, I would like to be able to do that without having to worry about, oh, these people are going to get in trouble, or is it legal for this to happen? And I just think it's so important for us to have that freedom, the freedom to choose.
And that's what it comes down to, is the consumer's right to choose.
Right.
And what we're looking for is a legal environment by passing a health freedom bill at the state level. And incidentally, that has to be done at the state level because that's where regulations concerning work licensing happens. It does not happen at a federal level. So what we're talking about has to occur in every state to really make this huge difference. But basically, we have a medical law that has the MDs in every state claiming all rights to healing. And, we've lived with that since the beginning of the 1900s, and we've taken that for granted. And a lot of people are recognizing the need for an open market for other things. Now, I had a conversation with a representative here in Ohio recently, and we had already told his aide about our stories, about how we had arrived at a a need for something alternative in our lives. And he walked in the room after we had done that, so I'm going to ask you that in just a minute. But he said, well, why don't you people just go to a licensed professional? Mm-hmm. And the reason is that we did, and we didn't find what we needed. Mm-hmm. So we had to proceed and go somewhere else. So, Kim, why don't you tell your story? You mentioned that this afternoon.
Sure, sure. I was on oxygen for 2.5 years. Your oxygen level should be in the high 90s up here in Colorado anyway. And with oxygen, my oxygen level was in the 50s. And they, a lot of times the doctors just say, they couldn't figure out what was going on. They couldn't figure out what was causing it. They said I had fibrosis and scarring in the lungs. They sent me to a pulmonologist who wanted to put me in the hospital, collapse my lung, which would take a week. I'd be in the hospital a week, and to do a biopsy. I asked him at that point what would happen, and he said then they would put me on steroids. I said I did not want to be on steroids, and I did not want to have my lung collapsed in order to do that. So I met a friend of mine, talked to me about a traditional naturopath, and I went to see her. My first pulmonologist wasn't willing to work with me, but the second one was. He said, as long as you're making improvement, then I'm willing to work with you. So as I used the herbs, the diet, you know, nutrition, I gradually got better and better and better. I eventually found out that there were toxic fumes in my home, and that is what was causing the fibrosis and scarring on the lungs. With oxygen only being in the 50s, they would look at me and say, I don't know how you're walking around. As I continued to get better, I eventually got off the oxygen, so I have been off the oxygen now. The last CAT scan they did, he said 95% of the scarring and fibrosis was gone and it wasn't supposed to go away. So I truly, truly believe that I'm here alive today because of that traditional naturopath. So as a consumer, I think it's very important for me to be able to have a freedom of choice to be able to see her or any other alternative healthcare practitioner that I would choose to see. So that's why it's such a passion for me.
Okay, and I'll tell a little bit about our story, too. My husband developed malignant melanoma within 2 years of our marriage, and that was in 1983. We went through the normal procedures of... In fact, he went to the James Cancer Center here in Columbus, which is named after a very famous cancer doctor. And then Dr. James himself was Norman's surgeon. He did a radical neck section, and basically most of the medical world expected him to be gone within a matter of weeks of being diagnosed with malignant melanoma. And as I just said, it was 23 years ago, and he survived it. Surprised us that when he asked Dr. James if there was any chemo or radiation that could be done, Dr. James said the only type of therapy that seems to be helping with this particular melanoma, he said, was vitamin A therapy. And he had already started taking beta-carotene, which turns to vitamin A in the body, and has not missed his vitamin A ever since, and he's never had any recurrence of the melanoma. And you have a 75% chance of recurrence up to 4 years after the original occurrence of it. Then in 1994, he developed congestive heart failure, which was following in his father's footsteps. He had a congenital heart condition, which was the structure of his heart was just like his dad's. And at the point of discovery, he was at 18% capacity per beat. And he was told that he would need a heart transplant, and that would occur when it went down to 16%. And that means that for every squeeze of the heart, only 18% of the blood flows through. And it's supposed to be 50 to 55% per beat. The cardiologist informed him that no one ever gets better in his care, that they just get worse until the heart gives out. And basically you fill up with water and you drown. And they started him on a heart arrhythmia medication that has the side effects of killing off your thyroid, your liver, or your kidney. And the hope that the doctor expressed was that it would kill one of those organs before the heart. It was pretty bleak, I'll tell you. And they sent in a social worker to tell me that my job was to go home and sell everything they owned. And I said, why would we need to do that? And she said that our share of the insurance, and we were well insured at that point. He was a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Our share of the insurance would be $250,000, and so they tell people to show destitution on paper. So at the age of 42, because my husband was about to pass away or have a heart transplant, I was supposed to own nothing for the rest of my life, and they also told me I would never be able to work again because anything I earned would go into that. So I was done because my husband had heart problems. And that was with insurance.
Wow.
I could be in that movie Sicko.
Yeah.
So at that point, I, strangely enough, developed chronic fatigue and spent the next 2 years pretty much with my head on the couch. I'm an intelligent person. I mean, I've always been in the 99th percentile in tests in school, and I have a PhD. And I kept thinking there's got to be a way to find the right nutrients for the body to heal itself. You know, here I was at a point where I needed to be taking care of him. And incidentally, in 4 months' time, using CoQ10, vitamin E, some hawthorn berries later, and what was the other thing? Magnesium. His heart was back to 45%. Capacity per beat, and he was out of the woods. But there I was, laying on the couch with this chronic fatigue. And I remember thinking to myself that if I could ever get off the couch, I did not want to have the kind of care I was getting be the only available care to people. I wanted to make sure that the next person had an easier way of it. Because I kept getting from the doctor's office that I needed Valium to go home and forget about it. And I just simply did not want to have an addiction to a drug at that point on top of everything else. So I refused to fill the Valium prescriptions that I kept receiving. And that was also an insinuation that whatever was wrong was in my head. It had to do with the stress of my husband's situation and so forth. So I started reading. I started finding alternative people to help me. And slowly, you know, worked through the leaky gut syndrome, the fibromyalgia, what the muscles needed. I worked through allergies that were contributing to the situation. And I'll admit it wasn't easy. It was a long haul. But it is doable. I'm a walking testimony that chronic fatigue can be cured. It's not terminal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the books all say you're supposed to just go on welfare and forget about the rest of your life. So, you know, with all of that in front of me, my commitment is that the consumer lying on that couch can find a path to their own wellness that may not be through drugs and surgery, which is what the allopathic physician can offer us. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm saying that it's a narrow scope that, by law, they have to stay within drugs and surgery, and I just seem to be incapable of taking drugs. I react to every single one that's out there. So I personally was looking at the plant life around me and herbs as not, at first it was a substitute, but I've realized since then it has a whole different way of healing by nurturing the whole body. Now, that's just a little bit of a difference in how those approaches work. But then I found out, as I got better and better, that there's a kind of a prejudice against that,
mm-hmm.
And as I started doing research for other people, that's how I do the legal thing here, I just do research for people, I noticed that there's a prejudice coming from the population because that's not, quote, real medicine. Okay, so what one of the answers to that question that I posed to you is, how different would the world look if we didn't have laws that are punitive before you even get started, you know, doing something that's on the natural side or energy healing or that sort of thing. And I think one of the differences would be a less prejudice,
mm-hmm.
As we spread out into other types of healing forms,
right.
Wellness approaches. So that's our story, and it truly is a commitment to the next consumer who needs to be able to find the path more easily. One of the things I noticed is that no one was advertising. There was nothing in the yellow pages, and I was specifically looking for nutritional therapy. So just finding your way through that maze when it's strictly word of mouth makes it hard to do the first time out. So that's our story on it. Okay, so let's look at, what does a good health freedom law look like? What does a good health freedom bill look like?
Well, I know that there are 6 states right now that do have health freedom. That's Louisiana, Rhode Island, California, Minnesota, Oklahoma, and Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're all just, you know, a little different depending on you know, the different states and how they write those health freedom laws. But a health freedom law would enable a consumer to go to any alternative health care practitioner of their choice. It would allow practitioners to be able to practice, you know, without fear of any kind of retaliation or being thrown in jail. But it doesn't, it also, most the health freedom laws will have something in there like a disclosure. So you have to tell the consumer, this is my name, this is where I went to school, this is the education that I have, I'm not a doctor, I cannot diagnose, so that there's safety, the people are safe, so that it's not a safety issue. And I, you know, I just think that, again, it goes back to this freedom of choice and for us to be able to have that freedom and be able to go to who we want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't the disclosure also have a list of prohibited activities? So
yes,
we're not practicing medicine.
Right. So you can't puncture the skin. You can't do minor surgeries. You cannot prescribe drugs, legend drugs, those types of things. I'm trying to remember. Can you think of anything else that I'm forgetting?
Can't puncture the skin. Can't prescribe drugs.
No minor surgery.
There are some more, but that list is to clarify to the consumer that I am not an MD. I don't intend to be substituting for one. I'm doing something different, and we'll leave doctoring to the doctors, okay?
Correct.
And the emergency room is over there.
Right.
Right.
That's correct.
And that, we feel, protects the consumer by educating the consumer.
Right.
And I'm delighted to have a law say, you know, you have to hand customer a sheet that describes what the expectation would be from your modality.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say modality, we're talking about things like, this would include Reiki, which is an energy healing, mm-hmm. any type of energy healing. We have in Ohio a bee sting artist. He does bee stinging for arthritis. We also have a lot of sound therapy going on around us. And this is besides herbalism
Color
and naturopathy.
Therapy. Color therapy. I've seen people that have worked with color puncture or color therapy.
Homeopathy would be included here. There are all kinds of things that that could be beneficial toward helping a person find their balance, which is what homeopathic and naturopathic healing is working toward, is a balance. Okay? So that would be what the bill looks like. And the intention of the health freedom bill is that no one would ever again be prosecuted for helping another human being as long as no harm is shown.
Correct.
In other words, innocent until proven guilty, right?
Right.
Okay, so perhaps we should tell the story of the first health freedom bill in Minnesota.
Well, from what I understand, Diane Miller she's a lawyer with the National Health Freedom Coalition in Minnesota, and she had a gentleman that was a farmer that was selling colostrum to his different clients, that also where he also sold the milk, and he was arrested because that was practicing medicine without a license. And so then Diane represented him, and then they worked towards getting the health freedom bill passed in Minnesota. Am I missing anything on that?
That's pretty much it, yeah. So here was a farmer, and when she was defending him in court, she had a jury that was really puzzled by how they were supposed to find a farmer guilty of practicing medicine for selling milk.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to rule on it. They had actually hung the jury. So, you know, it was clear in that case that a law needed to be changed here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So then Diane had started this organization, National Health Freedom Coalition, and now she works with every other state and anyone that wants to try to put in a health freedom bill or needs to work on protecting health freedom in other states, because it's not always just putting in a health freedom bill. Sometimes it's protecting from other bills that could go in that could also restrict a consumer's freedom of choice as well.
Now let's look at the fact that if a consumer's freedom of choice is restricted, okay, what is that about?
Okay.
If anything is placed between the person who's choosing and their right to choose it, that is a restriction of freedom. And if in any way, shape, or form you have to get government permission, mm-hmm. you've restricted access. You want to elaborate on that?
Sure. And then, for example, so I worked in Delaware this past session, and they had a dietitian bill that was going through, a licensure bill, but the way it was originally written, that only they would be able to engage in the practice of nutrition. So if it would have passed in its original form, you and I, someone like you and I, couldn't give any kind of nutrition advice to anyone else without, and then we would have been illegal.
Well, that and that's the status of things in Ohio, because we have that bill here.
Do you? Okay.
Yes.
So so that's what we were trying to work on there. So that would be one example. In Colorado, this past session, we worked on a naturopathic physician bill. Now, to most people, they think naturopathic physician, they wanted to be licensed. What's wrong with that? Well, the problem was, again, the way it was written, it was only naturopathic physicians from a select group of schools that would have been allowed to practice natural and alternative health care. And again, everyone else would not have been able to practice legally. And then some people would ask the question, well, you already can't practice legally because of the Medical Practice Act. Well, if this bill would have gone through and someone was an herbalist and they were turned in for being an herbalist and practicing medicine without a license, then they would be in trouble with the Medical Practice Act. And in addition, they would have also been in trouble with the Naturopathic Physician Act, and which held felonies. So they would have been in trouble with both laws, and it would have made it even worse. So, again, that's why we worked really hard, and we got that one stopped. And hopefully we're trying to work with the naturopathic physician so that, again, we can get a health freedom bill that protects us and them, but it allows the freedom of choice for the consumers to see. Again, if they want to see them, that's great. But then if they want to see an herbalist or a homeopathic person or herbalist, then they can do that.
Okay, I've heard Diane say many times that, we can deal with licensing naturopaths or Reiki or whatever people want to get licensed in for the sake of, I guess it would be making their profession look better because they have a license. You mm-hmm. can do that later after we have established the foundation of a good consumer health freedom bill in a state.
That's correct.
In other words, a consumer health freedom bill does not contain a registration aspect, which means permission from any governing body to help someone else. It's felt that that is the right that we need to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with some legislators recently, and I had just 2 days before been to the public library here and had done a talk on herbs for them. And when I arrived, my audience was a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, and their mom, you know.
Oh, wow.
And that changed my talk completely right there as I walked in the room. And one of the things that I did with this little crowd was to show them how to find plantain in the yard and smoosh it up and put it on their arm if they had a bee sting.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was appropriate to them, and it was something that they could learn and contain and take home. And I did get a call from one of them, I think it was 2 days later, and they were calling to make sure they got the right leaf because they'd had a bee sting and he wanted to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told this legislator, I said, now, if you have any educational requirement in here, even if it's as small as a high school education, you are restricting the flow of information to anybody. And what if that 3-year-old decides to tell a friend of his?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the high school education in there?
Right.
And what's wrong with them telling each other about leaves that can help to pull the bee sting
right.
out, you know?
Right, exactly.
So we do not support anything with an educational requirement or permission from the government, i.e. registration, because
mm-hmm.
of the whole idea is the free flow of information with no one ever being prosecuted for helping someone else when there's no harm shown. And with the consumer's viewpoint, you just can't have those restrictions on it.
Right.
Okay. So you've recently been through the dietitian's bill.
Yes.
And you got that successfully resolved there?
Yes, so we did end up in it's a lot of discussions going back and forth. But we did get an amendment on there, so that amendment excluded other people from giving nutrition advice. So the dietitians can become licensed, and certain nutritionists can become licensed if they follow those rules and their education and training that they need. but there's an exclusion for other people can give out nutrition advice without having to be licensed as a dietitian.
And were the dietitians happy?
Well, no, not really. I think they finally conceded because we were, you know, we kept in there and kept fighting. Of course, they wanted it through without that, but we, again, kept fighting because we know it's important for other people to be able to engage in the practice of nutrition. I mean, that's simple as even a health food store owner. You know, many people will come in to a health food store and they say, you know, I have XYZ. You know, what would be some suggested things that would be good for me to eat, or what would be some suggested supplements I could take? Well, if that would have passed in its original form, they wouldn't have been able to do that legally. So, so this amendment and exclusion will now exempt them from being prosecuted.
Right. And we've had some legislators not understand this one too. They'll say, well, herbalists could be very dangerous. After all, you could give someone ephedra, or you could give someone what's the weed we have around here, Jimson weed, which is poisonous and kids are hallucinating on it. But I keep looking at them and saying, well, I don't have those on my shelf. You know, the federal government regulates what you can sell and what you can't.
Right, that's correct. And so if it's something that is a danger to society, then the FDA will pull that supplement or herb from the shelf and not allow it to be sold.
Right. And so that's a real simple answer. And you wouldn't stay in business if you were going around poisoning every other person anyway. Why would you?
Again, the goal is to help people.
That's right. That's right. And, I think that's one of the misconceptions that we're running into is that protection of the public is the legislators, that's their job, isn't
it? Right, and that's what they need to protect the public. And a lot of times different people like the naturopathic physicians or the dietitians will come in with that saying, we need to protect the public. And so then the legislators will think, oh, we have to protect the public.
From the bad ones in
our
group.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But we're again, it goes back to we're not doing anything wrong. We're not harming the public. Everything that, you know, the things that we're doing are safe.
Right. And when we say we, you know, that's another thing. It's when there's a registration component to a bill, very often it's cloudy, it's very gray, and you don't know who we is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at some of the statistics that came out of the North Carolina group. They're saying that half of our medical money or half of the medical dollar that's being spent in America is going to complementary and alternative healthcare providers.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No, I did not know
that's
that.
That's huge. That means that there are an awful lot of us not advertising out here. There are some in Minnesota and California who do. But my business is word of mouth. So, it's a lot of people being very careful. And clearly, you know, no one's going to be out there doing anything harmful or dangerous that needs to be licensed. Now, of course, on the medical board side, you know, they argue against this, and they say, well, we have to get licensed, so you do too. Mm-hmm. Well, who's you, first of all? But second of all,
but I always go back to licensure or registration doesn't prevent bad people from doing bad things.
That's right.
And we do have laws in effect, like even in Colorado, there was a situation with one person that did something wrong, but the laws were in place, and that man is in jail.
Right.
So we already have laws in place to protect the public.
And we have the Better Business Bureau for complaints.
Right, right. And like I said, you know, licensure registration isn't going to protect the public and prevent someone from doing something bad anyway.
So we'll go back and recap. So the intention of a good health freedom bill is that no one shall ever again be prosecuted for helping someone else when no harm is shown or no intention of harm is shown.
Correct.
And that the consumer has a well-educated choice in what health care he or she gets involved with.
Correct.
That's it.
Right.
Can't have permission from the government in that kind of a law. It's an exemption bill rather than a right to practice bill is what we're after.
Right.
Now, we're teaching you this because we want you to be well aware of what a good health freedom bill looks like. And why we don't want to go toward registration and licensure.
Mm-hmm.
But first, we want to just make sure that consumer is protected in his right to choose. And the practitioners have to be free and open in order for the consumer to be have available to him everyone's knowledge that's
mm-hmm.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had things like permission from the government, which would be in the way of that consumer's choice, there would be many people who would shut their mouth rather than register. I would be
that's
one,
correct.
For
that's
example.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that limits the consumer's right to choose whenever that government steps into the middle there. So what we're asking for is an exemption or safe harbor type of bill.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually very simple bills. Those are the ones you want to support. Now, I'm going to ask you, Kim, since you've been in the business of developing a steering committee for Colorado and doing some lobbying and so forth, if someone's interested in this, first of all, is this urgent right now, do you think?
I think it's urgent, yes. Because, again, it goes back to, well, for instance, in Colorado. Right now, it is illegal for us to be able to practice. This past year, the naturopathic physicians tried to get a bill through, and they're going to try again next year. The dietitians have tried in the past. I have also heard that the massage therapists are also going to be trying to put in a bill also that would limit people that do energetic work, such as Reiki. Would not be able to do that unless they were a licensed massage therapist. So, you know, it's very important for us to get a health freedom bill passed. But even in states where they haven't heard of that yet, it's coming. We need to get that in there so that everyone does have that freedom of choice, and it is there.
Now, in Ohio, with the massage therapy bill that has also been passed several years ago, one of the things that's happened with that is that the massage therapist medical or their textbook is written by an MD, not by a massage therapist. And I've known many of them to go through the courses, and then it takes them 4 or 5 tries to pass the test. So it limits the number of massage therapists available to the population.
Oh, okay.
And makes it very hard for them to meet those standards. So it isn't, you know, and one of the issues that the Massage Therapy Board has with a health freedom bill is they're telling the massage therapist now that would negate their education by allowing anybody to put their hands on anybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what happens after you get such a bill in place. It limits anybody doing any touch therapy to just one school of thought, and then it becomes stagnant with that too. That's another issue that I've had with this. Is if we had a good health freedom bill passed in every state, you would have much more intellectual freedom. You'd have a free flow of thought. There'd be more experimental stuff going on. I know that in Ohio, we just recently had with this session, they developed a new committee in the House of Representatives called the Health Access and Affordability Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cost of medical care has gone so high that it's become a problem in itself. We're hearing that there's a movie out called Sicko that has to do with insurance and all of that, and just how expensive it is to have insurance and how, you know, ridiculous the rules are with all that. What if we had, you know, just good old natural stuff available at every corner and people could talk about it out loud?
Wouldn't that be great?
wouldn't that reduce the cost of medical care if people could keep themselves well?
Yes. Exactly.
I actually had a call from a lady from the Business and Professional Women here in Ohio saying that they were looking for a good bill to support that would help to reduce the cost of medical care in Ohio. And I said, well, this bill, come over here and talk to us.
Really help. Now, so in Ohio, you have your Medical Practice Act. It sounds like you've got the massage and the dietitian. Do you have a naturopathic physician bill there then also?
We have a naturopathic physician bill that's being considered by one of the legislators.
Okay.
So we're working to get a health freedom bill passed. We are, to be very honest with you, killing a registration bill, which we feel is the opposite of health freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get a health freedom bill passed, and then we'll let the naturopaths work that out as long as they keep health freedom in their language and don't restrict people from practicing. Then they can, we'll work
right.
with them on that. But my real concern is the health freedom for the consumer.
Right, exactly. So there's two things I was going to say. One is, so then in Ohio, I know of people here in Colorado that do alternative health care that have many people from Ohio coming here. So I think when you don't have a health freedom bill, also in your state, you're using income revenue to people that are going out of state then because they can't get what they need in their own state.
Right. And we have to be extremely careful when we do public talks that we ask if dietitians are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be very careful about, you know, what we say about diet if they are.
Right. And I would the other thing I wanted to mention is about the registration. And a lot of people think, well, it's okay. All you have to do is just pay your money and put your name and address in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is once you do that, then the government has control. Things don't go back to a vote again and don't go back to committees. So, for example, in the state of Colorado, this is how I understand it, is that there's an unlicensed psychotherapist registration, and that's how it started out. Well, now it's so complicated because then they can go in and make all these changes. So now it's that even a minister can only do spiritual counseling with his own congregation. So if he, you know, wants to counsel someone that's not in his congregation, he would have to register as an unlicensed psychotherapist. So that's just one example that shows what happens
mm-hmm.
with registration, where it just seems something very, very simple at the beginning, but then it gets changed. And so a lot of mm-hmm. people think, well, it won't get changed. They'll have to go, it'll have to go back and, you know, go through the whole stage again. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It belongs to whoever's in charge of that office.
Right.
And they can make up those rules. They can change. Once you have established an educational bottom, that can be changed later, too.
Right. So it could start out with something, like you said, a high school education. Then they can go in later and say, well, no, you have to be a graduate from XYZ school with 500 hours.
Mm-hmm. And a high school education, now let's think about it. Don't the scouts learn about plants along the trail?
Oh, sure, exactly.
So where's the high school education there? And don't we have a bunch of Weight Watchers leaders going around talking about diet and health?
Mm-hmm. Well, what about my grandparents were Native American. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of things that are handed down.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they have an education, but it doesn't mean that they're not harming anyone. They're just educating and helping.
That's right. That's right. Now, I had a legislator tell me this, and again, this comes from his place of wanting to protect the public. He said that he has a doctor friend who had a patient who had cancer, and this person chose to go the herbal route and then died.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My response to him was, lots of people die of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, what would you have said to him?
Exactly. That's similar to the situation that happened out here in Colorado. Was someone that had whose child had cancer went to an alternative health care practitioner,
mm-hmm.
and that child died. Now, mm-hmm. odds are, and of course that's horrible, but the child probably was going to die anyway because I don't think they, you know, had the percentage of him, you know, the chance of him living was very, very slim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. People with cancer do die. People, you know, with any disease sometimes mm-hmm. just do die.
Mm-hmm. And I know my father went through the radiation therapy, and I remember the doctor telling me that the radiation would give him 3 years. And it was right on the nose. 3 years later, he had the cancer back, and there was nothing more they could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you still die of cancer, even with the treatment,
mm-hmm.
in many cases. So
that's true. But again, to me, it goes back to, again, the freedom of choice.
Exactly. And it's my choice to decide how I'm going to, you know, how to deal with that.
Right.
You think about it. Whose body is this that's hanging on to your bones there?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
yours, and it's your right to choose.
Right.
Your right to read, to be intelligent. It's your right to eat the wrong things,
right.
you know. We let sales of tobacco and alcohol go pretty freely in this culture.
Right. And look at the medical profession and how many problems are people that die from the medical profession. Not saying, you know, whatever, but, you know, the risk of alternative health care is very, very low of anybody getting hurt or dying with that.
I read in Life Extension magazine, I believe it was October of last year, that the number of iatrogenic illnesses or deaths, mm-hmm. which means doctor-induced or hospital-induced, is 800,000 a year, which puts it at number one.
Wow.
In this country.
Wow.
So, you know, when a medical board person says to me, we have to be licensed, of course you do too, if you laid somebody out on a table and started cutting them open and you didn't have a license as a surgeon, it would be illegal to do that.
Correct.
So, yeah, those people need to be licensed. We need to make sure they've had certain education to do that. But if we're talking about picking plantain, why can't a three-year-old pick the plantain when he's mm-hmm. seen someone else do it and put it on his next bee sting? Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Because
right.
there's no harm in that.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No
so, harm. So you know, it seems to me that it would be in the interest of the boards or even the pharmaceutical industry for everybody to have to face off with registration and decide whether they want to open their mouth or not. When you think about it, whose interest is being served here with the registration?
Right.
And in the name of public protection, that's what some legislators are coming up with. But we need to be armed to tell them what is wrong in that thinking. You know, it's really about freedom of speech, and
again,
we
right.
need to
freedom
protect
of
that freedom
of
speech.
Freedom of choice, and like you said, everyone should have that choice to go to the person that they want to go to.
Mm-hmm. And not have that person concerned about whether he's going to be hauled away
right.
tomorrow because
right.
of it. Or if someone gets upset with them, they could call in a medical board and shut them down or something or cause them a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked in Minnesota. It's worked in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exemption bill, not a right to practice bill. Okay, let's look at what people could do if they are concerned about this. And I do think it's an urgent issue. I wouldn't be so involved in it myself.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'd say go online or go to your library and find out who your representative in the state house is. In Ohio, we have 99 districts. So, you know, it's usually a portion of a city or one to three counties, and you need to go find out who your representative is and what district you're in, and then make friends with that person.
Right.
I came to find out that we actually have two representatives living in my small town 5 miles from me, and I know these two guys. I taught one of their kids in kindergarten years ago. Those are the guys you need to get to know and let them know that you're interested in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the basics that we did tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That we need a good health freedom bill so that people can make choices, and it's about protecting the consumer's rights. Then find out who your senator is. In Ohio, you can go on ohiogov.com and find out which district you're in for both the Senate and the House. Find out who your man is or your woman, and go make friends with them. Okay,
right.
That's the first step.
Right, build a relationship.
Right, and they don't mind being bombarded. They are public servants, and they need to know what their constituency is interested in.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And then I think there's some different websites. Diane has an excellent website. She even has those health freedom states that have passed laws. They're on her website, so people could look at them. And then especially if they're not from, you know, Colorado or Ohio, to get in contact with us. But should I share that website?
Yeah, go ahead. State the website.
Okay, it's for the National Health Freedom Coalition, and it's www.nationalhealthfreedom.org. And I think that's a good place to start and look and see what a health freedom bill looks like. Like you said, people might want to know what a health freedom bill looks like. So they can go on that website and then they can see that.
Mm-hmm. She has an email address too.
Yes.
Similars, SIMILARS, at AOL.com. Okay?
Yep, that's correct.
Now, you mentioned us.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, for Colorado, my email is Kimberly Sharples. At MSN.com. It's Kimberly with a L-Y, and Sharples is S-H-A-R-P-L-E-S at MSN.com. And we do have a website, and that is www.ColoradoHealthFreedomAlliance.org.
Okay, and we have the Ohio HealthFreedom.info. No, wait. Yeah, that's right, ohiohealthfreedom.info. And that gets you on the Ohio website. And if for some reason that doesn't work or you just want to communicate with me, it's N Gingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H. I spell it different than Newt does, E-R-I-C-H, at Cincy, C-I-N-C-I, .R-R.com. Okay, and In Ohio, we are pulling out the stops this summer. We want somebody in every district to start lobbying their representative. And we're having a meeting very soon on that, and we are seriously looking for somebody in every district. So please let us know you're out there, and we'll put you to work. We need to communicate with every one of our representatives and senators because we intend to have this done in this session, okay? So that's where we're at.
And we're doing the same thing, and we're trying to have town meetings to educate the public and be able to also speak and educate the legislators, because a lot of the legislators don't understand either. And I think that's real important to be able to not only build that relationship with them, but also talk to them about this. And like you said, you want to go around and educate. So if anybody in Colorado is out there would like to learn more information, or if they would like to host a meeting that we could come and talk to, that would just be wonderful. Please contact us with that, too.
Same thing. And we're planning to hit at least 5 major areas of the state to do training for lobbyists. And we're looking at using, working through the libraries for meeting rooms that where we can meet with people and the legislators in one room, too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So the national group that we are both affiliated with is the www.sunshinehealthfreedomfoundation.com. I know it's long. It's www.sunshinehealthfreedomfoundation.com, all small letters. Okay?
Yep, that's great.
And there's a conference that the Health Freedom Coalition,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes. That's Diane's group, the National Health Freedom Coalition, and it's their 5th annual Health Freedom Conference.
I went last year. It was really educational.
I'm going to be going this year, so I'm looking forward to it. It is going to be October 12th to the 14th at William Mitchell College of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota. They will have a United States Health Freedom Assembly. They're going to have speakers. Attorney Sandra Duffy is going to speak on experiences on the front lines of the health freedom movement, what is working and what is needed. Clinton Miller, he's going to speak on top priorities for health freedom leadership. And Clinton's been doing health freedom for over 50 years. Wonderful, wonderful man. Deborah Miller she's from the Florida Health Freedom, and she's going to speak on the Florida health freedom movement. Peter McCarthy from the Texas Health Freedom will speak on success in building a strong, collaborative health freedom movement. Ricky Gill is the NHFC Director of Conference and Development, and he will talk on fundraising for health freedom. And then, of course, Diane Miller will be speaking on drafting issues with licensure bills for dietitians, naturopaths, and massage therapists. So I think it would be really, really great if people could go to that. And there is more information, again, at her website, www.nationalhealthfreedom.org.
Then if you're interested in starting up a statewide coalition or alliance, as yours is called,
mm-hmm.
there'll be training there to help you get that started. But get together with people from various modalities and start talking. And in Ohio, our steering committee meets by phone once a week. And, we'll be spreading that out into the libraries and other meetings. Understand that this does need to be funded, and as you're developing this steering committee, start finding ways in your state to fund this. You may even find yourself needing the expense of a lobbyist in order to really speak to the legislators. So understand that this is a very, it's not impossible by any means, but at the same time, be looking at ways to fund it. And your steering group can actually get this to happen. It is worth it. It truly
definitely,
is.
Most definitely.
So gathering up your steering committee, and I'll tell you what, I know these people on the steering committee probably better than my family by now. We've had a great time doing what we're doing. And you may find yourself having to kill some bills that don't match the philosophy that we're really looking for here, and that's what we're in the midst of right now in Ohio. Let's see. There, as we were developing in Ohio, one of the things that came up is a certain amount of, shall we call it, fear of sticking one's head up?
Right, right.
Let's talk about about that, because as Clinton told me one day, he said, if we're all doing it at the same time, they can't see your head.
Right. Right, and that's a very good point. But there, and things aren't going to change unless people speak up and people work together to get these changes in and get the health freedom passed.
And it's not like the legislators are enforcement officials. If you sit there with a legislator and you say, I am acting illegally every day, we need this health freedom bill because I don't know when the dietitians are going to come after me, they're not going to report you. These are the guys you can tell it to straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give them your health story and explain to them that, oh, well, I tried all the licensed professionals, but it wasn't working. Did you want me to roll over dead, or is it okay that I keep trying to find health for myself?
Well,
of course it is.
And my experience has been with talking to representatives and senators, as the majority of them do use some kind of alternative health care, or they know someone who has. And so the majority of them are in favor of this.
Right. And I had one of them listen to me very carefully, and she said, will you please call? And she gave me the name of the store. She says, this is 3 miles from me, and I know these people. And if they tell me the same thing you did, I'll sponsor your bill.
Wow.
You know, so they know the folks in their own districts.
Right.
And if we can just start hooking those up with, you know, the reality of the situation, and that is that we are all choosing to be well, and we're looking for what works. There's a store in Cincinnati called Whatever Works.
and
no one has a right to stop that search.
Right.
That's the whole point here.
Right.
And as more and more of us take on that search, we have to have our laws reflecting what the common population is finding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's pretty much it. Now, we have about 3 minutes left. Do you have anything you want to conclude with there?
No, I just think it's important that, you know, we allow consumers to be able to have that freedom of choice to see the practitioner of their choice, and so that those practitioners that are out there working hard and just try, and that's all they're trying to do is help others.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's so, so important.
And I wouldn't want to see the common population have their mouths shut either. I feel like the dietitian's bill in Ohio has, to some extent, taken away my right to free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Because my favorite topic is to talk about health and wellness and its relationship to diet and supplements. And I have to be very careful what I say in Ohio. And
right.
I teach all over the country. No place is worse than here as far as freedom of speech.
Right. Yes. And that's just so sad to me.
It is. It's very
sad. We're in America.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in America and we can't talk about health. And what's our big issue? What is really hitting the news right now?
Right.
And the cost, mm-hmm. you know, average insurance is $800 a month for medical insurance. That's to keep from having high costs? Folks, we've been boiled lowly.
And I think that the last statistics I saw on bankruptcies were, I think over half of all bankruptcies are due to, are medically related, and 75% of those people had insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the insurance, you know, like you said, the cost is just astronomical. And there are, I know many, many people that don't even have insurance because mm-hmm. they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. And then I can't turn around and really say in the newspaper loud and clear, over here, try this,
mm-hmm.
Because of the legal situation. So, you know, take it in hand and you know, let your representative know, let your senator know that you want to start a health freedom movement in your state and get them enrolled in helping you to do that. And understand that in that process, there's not a medical board out there that's going to like the idea of a health freedom bill.
Right.
So you're going to tell them that's a matter of turf. But when it comes right down to it, my doctor in this area does not object to what we do. In fact, we do things they can't do, so they send people to us.
Right. And most, at least a lot of the doctors, I had one, like I said, the first pulmonologist wasn't willing to work with me, but everyone else that I have worked with has been all more than willing to work with me. So
mm-hmm.
there are medical doctors that are out there, too. And
mm-hmm.
and I think if someone wants to do this, but they're a little afraid, I think that's where Diane's group can also come in. I mean, they could contact us, but Diane helps all the other groups
mm-hmm.
In the other states, and I'm sure that she would be more than willing to help people to work on a health freedom bill in their state.
Mm-hmm. Well, our time is up. It's 10:55 my time, and we need to sign off. So thank you very much, Kim, for being on tonight, and I hope that whoever's listening that you gained from it and that perhaps you've been a little bit inspired to leave your state in a better state than it was when you found it by helping to pass a health freedom bill.
Yes.
Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, everybody, and Jackie. Hi.
Hi, darling.
the day after the 4th of July.
You're back from a wild and woolly trip.
Yes, I am. Actually, it wasn't wild and woolly. It was very restful and wonderful in nature, and I loved every minute of it.
Well, it shows in your vibes.